Because as you said, when I'm saying yes, I'm saying no to other things. And so when I'm saying no to some things, I'm really saying yes to the things I value more. And I think one of the biggest mindsets I've tried to develop sort of separately from that, but I think that has been really helpful when it comes to business development, but also just in general, is adopting, you know, in my mind, the phrase, you know, how can I help? And truly thinking about every interaction as how can I help?
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Build Your Book podcast. And on this show, we talk about how lawyers can build a solid book of business authentically and stress-free for greater financial success, fulfillment, and peace of mind. I'm your host, Double Tank. Let's get started. One of the big topics that I think a lot of lawyers come through or they really think about is this idea of being a shark. They feel that, you know, to succeed in the legal profession, and it's not just lawyers, but I think there's a broader perspective out there in the media, TV shows, all that sort of stuff, that lawyers are sharks. They are hunters. They're out there to go out there and kill someone. They're out there to get some prey and persuade them, finagle them, put them in some sort of lock and make them do things. It's a very vicious kind of idea that's out there. And it gives people the impression that lawyers have to be takers. They have to be net takers. They're a net drain on society. And there's a really interesting book that I was reading called Givers and Takers by Adam Grant. Givers and Takers by Adam Grant, professor at the University of Pennsylvania, professor at Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. And he studied a huge number of people to try and understand what it actually takes to succeed in any profession, in any career. And he learned that actually, on average, the givers come out on top. So we really had to try and combat this idea that you need to be a taker. You need to be this hunter. You need to be this shark who's out there devouring the client, devouring whatever is in his or her way. I don't know if you've had any experiences like that in the profession so far, of what you've seen other people do, or this misguided way of thinking and seeing the world.
Yeah, I definitely have. And I think it starts with, again, with mindset. And if you believe there's a limited number of clients out there, you know, if you believe that if you don't, you know, you're competing with somebody else, and if they get them, that means you're behind, you know, that's a different mindset. And I think some of that starts in law school. You know, when you think about law school, you're usually graded on a curve. So you've got a B curve, B range curve. And the better somebody else does, in theory, the worse you do. But if you really think about it, you're way better off collaborating with people, because your little cohort of people you're working with is more likely to do better, right? You're bouncing ideas off each other. You're talking to each other. And I think sometimes people start off in law school. Law school almost teaches you this lack of a giver mindset. It's almost this selfish kind of competitive mindset, which people think in the short term is going to benefit them. And it actually doesn't. It's the opposite, right? It's building those connections, having that study group, having those people. And not only does it help you in the short term, you know, often do better in school, but big picture, you know, a lot of my first clients were my law school classmates or my business school classmates or people like that. And the people I work with these days all the time. And so I think if we switch off that mindset from competition and from scarcity into more of an abundance one, you know, it definitely helps out a lot. You know, I think an easy example of one thing lawyers can do that costs nothing, you know, minimal time, enormous value, is being a connector. And that's something I've been doing a lot more of in the last year or two. You know, I'll be talking to somebody, could be a potential client, could be a friend, could be a mentee, could be any of those people. And I'm thinking, you know, who can I connect them with? What can I do to help? And I'll give you an example of something I did with a client maybe 3 or 4 months ago. It was a new client of mine. I was doing work on a fixed fee basis. And I was talking to the client late at night, and their company was growing really, really quickly. Tech company, doing great. But the guy I was talking to, who was running all the operations, he was a COO, was incredibly busy. And as I heard him talking, he was telling me about, you know, all the people that are going to be hiring in certain areas and all of that. But he was sort of saying, you know, his team wasn't going to be getting any more help. And I remember thinking, holy smokes, you're already overwhelmed now. You know, what is it going to be like as you scale up? You're going from, you know, 50 employees to 250 employees in the next year, and you'll be at 1,000 in 3 or 4 years. You know, you're going to be even more under-resourced. And so, you know, I don't have all the answers. You know, I've never run a tech company that's raised hundreds of millions of dollars and that sort of thing. But what I do have are tons of clients I work with in the tech space, many of which have rapidly scaled up, including in the last couple of years. So what did I do? It wasn't legal advice. It was way more valuable than legal advice. It was making that connection and saying, you know what, actually, if you're interested in it, do you want me to put you in touch with one of my other clients that just went through this? You know, they've just raised a ton of money. They've, you know, quadrupled the number of employees they've had in the past year. They've done it all during the pandemic. And I made that introduction, right? And my understanding is not only are the clients potentially going to be working together, but he had the chance to, you know, to pick their brain, to talk to one of his, you know, peers at a similar firm. And that wasn't something I could have offered, right? But it was something I could do that was so simple, making an introduction and realizing that's incredible value I can add. I'm not being paid for it and I don't need to be. You know, you're building stronger relationships, but more importantly, you're doing the right thing and just helping. And I think that's so important to look at things like that. How can you add value? And you do that by being a giver, not a taker at all, you know? And I'm a huge fan of Adam Grant. I didn't actually know who he was until about a year ago, which is almost embarrassing because he's one of these preeminent thought leaders. But he's got a podcast called Work Life, which is absolutely fantastic. And I found the more and more I was listening to it, you know, the more I was realizing, wow, these are issues I'm dealing with every day at work. And just incredible, you know, advice, practical, actionable advice. And it sounds like, Dabble, you're a huge fan too.
I'm a huge fan. I think he's written a couple of books. He's written another book called Originals, which is about what it takes to be a creative in today's day and age. And I think that's an interesting book as well for a lot of lawyers, because I speak with lawyers who have this real inherent creative urge, and they feel constricted in being able to express that. And his book is really interesting because it tells you that there are all these intersections where they can actually practice law, where they can use their legal expertise and still be creative. So it's definitely a great book. He's a great thought leader. He's written for the Harvard Business Review. He has a really prolific blog. He has a prolific podcast. I'll put it all in the show notes, which, you know, you can read on buildyourbook.org/podcast. But you pointed out one practical tactic. Now you can implement this abundance mindset, being a connector, and being a connector without any expectations. You don't really have to see the payoff right then and there, but in some form or another, it comes back to you. The other thing you hinted at is having a long enough time horizon. I think far too often people have a really, really, really short time horizon. And this is exemplified even in public companies, right? They have to give out quarterly earnings. They have to give expectations of all, you know, here's the forecast for the next quarter. Here's the forecast for the next quarter. And that puts a tremendous amount of pressure. And some of the worst kind of corporate issues that have come out of the U.S. economy, or whatever you want to call it, have come from these really short-sighted attempts by companies to, you know, lay off a lot of workers. They have to finagle their accounting practices, all those sorts of things to meet the expectations that they've set themselves. So this short-term mindset can be quite detrimental. And there's a lot of thinking and thought leadership out there by a lot of scholars, a lot of academics, who have said that if Wall Street, if companies that are listed on the public stock market, if they just stopped giving reports or estimates for, well, here's going to be our quarterly earnings, the entire market would work a lot better. There wouldn't be these wild fluctuations that we see in the stock market. There wouldn't be a lot of the fraudulent practices we see in the stock market. And I think that's one of the things that lawyers need to also take to heart. We often have a really short-term, not we, but lawyers, I'm not a lawyer myself, a lot of lawyers have a really short-term time horizon. And by expanding it, you can grow this abundance mindset, because in the longer scheme of things, it is all going to work out. And you might not see how a connection you make today might pay off right then and there. You might not get a finder's fee or something like that. But a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you don't actually know how that's gonna bring, how things are going to connect with you again. 100%. Have you had a story like that? Have you had a story like that where, you know, a connection you made a long time ago is paying off right now or something like that?
Absolutely. But before I get to that, and remind me to come back to that, you know, as you were talking, it just reminded me of when I started using LinkedIn last year. So, I mean, like most people, you know, I had a LinkedIn account. I was not actively using it. It was a pretty, you know, sedentary resume sitting there. And when the pandemic broke out, I started using LinkedIn a lot more and started posting and doing thought leadership, and, you know, slowly built up a really nice following. And it's been great. met a ton of people, turned those into calls. Some have become clients, some have become friends. Some have just been, you know, really building my network. I had no expectations. But what I do remember is I was running an internal campaign at my firm to try to drive adoption. And our executive wanted that. And I figured, all right, let's gamify this. Let's make this fun. Because if we just make this a chore, it's not going to work. So I ran this really interesting campaign. It was a little, you know, people at our firm on LinkedIn versus Donald Trump on Twitter. And I created a scoring system, which was a little ridiculous. But all to say, you know, I sort of gamified it. And twice a week, I'd send out emails to my group with the updated leaderboard and some interesting stats and all sorts of other things. And I had a couple people come up to me and say, well, like, Aaron, like, how many clients have you gotten from this? How much work have you brought in? You know, we're 1 month in. And I remember thinking, you know, when you go to a conference or you go out for a lunch, you know, do you get work the next day? You know, this isn't a immediate kind of thing. And quite frankly, my goal wasn't even really to bring in work. I wasn't quite sure at the time what the goal was, but I had zero expectations. And I also wasn't making any asks. I was really just starting to post about things that were interesting to me with the hopes that they would be interesting to others. But it was amazing that, you know, with something new, even though LinkedIn really wasn't new, but I think for a lot of lawyers, the idea of posting or using it more actively was new. They still had this expectation that, well, like, is it paying off right away? And what they really meant is, should I do this myself? And their metric for that was, how quickly can I get something? And I think that was just the wrong mindset, because that's not how any of this works. And I think a lot of people who have built successful books of business forget what it was like starting out. And you know, these things don't happen overnight. And quite frankly, it's all about building relationships. And I'm not sure how many relationships get built in one day. But it's not many. You know, if it's happening overnight, you're in a transactional mindset. But when you think about why, you know, this mindset exists, I think part of it comes always back to incentives. And in law, you know, so many challenges in the legal profession tie back to incentives, one of which is the billable hour. And at the end of the day, you know, I make money by billing clients. I do a lot of fixed fee and alternative fees and, you know, work, but I also bill by the hour as well. And most people listening who are lawyers are going to be probably billing by the hour. And so when you're billing a client, you get an immediate reward, assuming the client pays, right? You put in 1 hour of input and you get paid, you know, your hourly rate. And that's pretty straightforward. But any kind of business development, there's generally no immediate payoff. And sure, it's a non-billable hour and maybe you're tracking those, maybe not. But we all know that at most firms, those really aren't rewarded. And so the challenge is, you know, if you're spending a lot of time doing business development at the expense of your billable hours, people might be thinking, oh, well, Aaron's underproducing. You know, he's only billed 1,200 hours this year. What is he doing? We're not going to give him a bonus or a raise or what have you, or maybe my salary is going down. And I think that's part of the challenge, because law is so, you know, we're so focused on these short-term results, especially in partnerships, that we lose sight, especially on the business development side, that it takes time to do this. And I think that's also why it's so important to start early on. And I wish I had started earlier, because it's really tough to, you know, build a book at the same time as you're hitting or exceeding your target. And I think that's why it's all about doing it efficiently in an authentic way where it doesn't quite feel like work. Because if it does feel like more work and you're already, you know, stressed or struggling to hit these targets or to keep a roof over your head, you know, you're not in the right mindset to start at all.
And you know, the big set of news that you put on LinkedIn today is that you're going to be going somewhere else and starting up fresh, really. And I'm sure that is, you're able to make a confident move like that because you have an abundance mindset. You spend the time cultivating this mindset that's given you freedom to be like, well, you know, I want to explore a different set of interests. I want to explore a different set of curiosities, things that really drive me, that I'm really passionate about. And it helps when you have an abundance mindset. And you've been able to cultivate that throughout this last year. You know, we've been working together on this as well. But, I mean, talk to us more about how this abundance mindset is helping you make the move from, you know, a bigger law firm into whatever it is that you're going to be doing next.
Yeah, no, I think it's really been helpful. And obviously, you know, your coaching has played a huge role in that over the past, you know, year. I think, you know, scarcity mindset just is pervasive all through law. And one of the things I think a lot of people believe deep down is that, you know, they shouldn't do stuff for free. They shouldn't give away any information. You know, by telling the clients the answer, or potential clients the answer, that they're doing something wrong. And I'm not talking about getting, you know, taken advantage of on you know, phone consultations and things like that, or initial consults. I'm talking about even just posting online. So I think for a lot of people, they might think, you know, well, the less the public knows, the more they're going to need a lawyer, because how are they supposed to navigate the system? So you know, why would I tell them, you know, how my practice works or what I do, or give them, you know, practical advice on these things for free? But that's, again, a sort of a scarcity mindset where you assume, you know, there's a shortage of clients. First thing is, you know, I'm really involved in the legal tech space. And, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, how do we provide better value for clients and do a lot of great stuff, leveraging technology, leveraging process, people, all that good stuff. And one of the things they talk about a lot in that space is the untapped legal market. I think it's like 85% or something of people, you know, can't afford a lawyer. And that's just not individuals. That's small businesses. That's medium-sized businesses. You know, a lot of people can't do that. And so there are so many people out there who have legal issues who need help and aren't getting served at all. So there's no shortage of clients. There's a shortage of clients who can afford to pay for traditionally done legal services that are not always the most efficient. But once you realize, okay, you know, if I can build, you know, a practice where I'm an expert and do stuff leveraging technology and do stuff in a more modern way, there is no shortage of clients out there or potential clients out there in the first place. So I think that's step one. But step two is really all about sharing. And, you know, again, when it comes to scarcity versus abundance, you know, be a giver, you know, post about stuff, talk about these things and help people. You know, it helps people realize that you're an expert. So you might think, oh, by giving this away, I'm hurting myself, but it's the opposite. You're showing people that you're someone they may want to work with, that you're someone who's knowledgeable. And what that means is that when they have a legal issue, they're more likely to reach out. And I can tell you with my LinkedIn stuff, for example, I don't think I've made a single sell or you know, attempt to sell on LinkedIn once since I started posting in the last year. But I can tell you that I've gotten tons and tons of messages from people I haven't spoken to in ages, both, you know, to catch up and connect. And that's been great. I've reestablished so many relationships with people I just lost touch with. I've met so many new people. I've supersized, I guess, my network. And I don't just mean, oh, my follower count is going up. That's artificial. That's superficial. I'm talking about, again, people I've hopped on calls with, people who are reaching out wanting to work together, people who are sending work to me, people I'm sending stuff to, because guess what? That person I connected with in New York or San Fran or wherever they are, when my clients suddenly need help, you know, they want to do something in the US, well, suddenly I've got those people I can speak to. So it's actually helping me, right? This is literally, how can I help my clients better? Every single person I expand my network with is helping. But I've also just gotten, you know, these messages where someone might say, hey, I'm actually, you know, selling some shares in this company, or I'm actually about to do this. And they never would have reached out previously because they would have forgotten I existed, quite frankly. And so I think, again, you know, this abundance mindset, there are so many people out there. And part of it is just finding an efficient way to get in front of them. But if you start with a scarcity mindset, that there's a shortage of people, that you don't want to give out information, it's not going to go well. You're going to be holding back. And, you know, you might think you're doing yourself a favor, but it's completely the opposite of that.
We talked a lot about this in our previous podcast about being authentic, being vulnerable, sharing your story, being completely okay with it. And this gives us really the third leg of how to be, how to have a sort of an abundance mindset. We talked in the beginning about, you know, being a super connector. We talked about a long time horizon, but really this third leg of providing a lot of value to people upfront without expectations, whether it be in the form of posts, the articles you write, whatever it might be, it's the creative portion. You know, this is the real void that a lot of lawyers feel, this lack of being able to be creative. You know, just the other day, I was talking to a lovely person. She's an immigrant lawyer out of Toronto. She's trying to set up her own practice, do things differently than what the other firms are doing. And she felt that she couldn't actually do that because it isn't really appreciated. She told me some wonderful stories of how she's been able to help her clients. And I told her, by goodness, like you need to tell these stories to other people. You need to tell the stories of these immigrants that you're helping. You need to tell the difference that you're making in your own way. She's an incredibly empathetic person. She's incredible at putting people at ease, at really seeing their stories, seeing the person, not seeing the file, but seeing the person. So she's wonderful at that. And she felt so constricted that she couldn't tell that story. At least that's the impression that I got. And in just the coaching call that we sort of did, she started to recognize that she needs to tell the story. Yet this isn't, you know, sharing these stories, making these posts, it's not just about putting out legal advice out there, But it is about being vulnerable, being authentic. That's the kind of stuff that the entire legal industry and profession needs to adapt. We've talked about this so deeply, and all of this, all of these ideas are connected. You know, one of the things that Aaron, you and I heard after the first couple of podcasts is that, well, where are the practical tips? Tell us the concrete things to do. And I always, you know, want to pause there and remind the listeners that you can't adapt the practical things. I can't tell you that, you know, go on LinkedIn, make a post on day one, day two, day three, here are five different posts you can make. All of that stuff comes much later. But what comes first are these ideas, these mindset changes. That is a lot more foundational and a lot more important, because if you get the mindset right, the strategies and tactics sort of take care of themselves. But I can give you the best strategies on how to grow your practice, how to build your business, how to build your book. But if you don't have the right mindset, if you have the scarcity mindset, if you're not willing to be authentic and vulnerable, if you're not willing to think about this in a very holistic way, you're going to fail. Sure, you might have some short-term success up and down, but then you're going to have a mediocre practice. You're going to have a mediocre career. You're going to feel that this isn't the career that you wanted. And we see a lot of that, right? We see a lot of people who are in their 30s, their 40s. There's a lot of burnout. There's a lot of dissatisfaction in this job because, sure, they might have wonderful strategies. They might be implementing wonderful tactics, but the mindset, this approach, this scarcity mindset is affecting them in everything that they do. They're afraid to be vulnerable. They're afraid to be authentic. They're not able to show their true selves. And that's not a good recipe to be in any profession. If you really can't be yourself, if you aren't happy to wake up and go to work every day, what's the point? You know, you talked a lot about this gaming concept. You tried to gamify things at your firm, and that's wonderful, right? Like, how many lawyers get to wake up in the morning and be like, you know, I can't wait to go to work. I'm going to treat it like a game. I'm going to make it fun. All of that stuff starts happening when you adapt an abundance mindset, when you adapt an abundance heart set. You know, it's not just something that's in your mind, but it's really something you feel in your gut. And that's what we're talking about here, adapting an abundance mindset. I don't know if you have any thoughts
on that.
You know,
as you're talking, you know, it sort of reminds me of what you're doing. You know, you're literally living proof of this right now. You know, so I think about this podcast that you started. I think about this book, you know, which I think is on your website, you know, buildyourbook.org, that you wrote that has all these tips. You know, you're not holding back on the information, you're giving it out to others, right? And I think part of that is the belief that we can do better, that, you know, you want to help people and you care. But obviously, you know, you're running a business here, right? You offer coaching services. And I mean, you've been an amazing coach for me. And I know you're coaching a lot of others. And I think probably some more stuff in the works. But, you know, if you were approaching this with a scarcity mindset, you wouldn't be writing a book, you wouldn't be having a podcast, you wouldn't be doing any of those things. But these things work. You know, the abundance mindset allows you to realize, wait a second, if I'm doing a podcast, firstly, I can help more people. I can provide free content and all that. And obviously, you know, you're going to have listeners who are listening and going to reach out. And I know you were telling me before we started recording, you know, just how many people reached out after our last podcast because they realized, wait a second, okay, like I could probably use some help. So, you know, the traditional approach in law is, well, don't do that. We charge for all our advice. But I think that's the old school mindset. You know, that's not a modern approach. And I've seen this with people I've reached out to for their podcast. I was just listening to a blockchain podcast yesterday, and I've already reached out to the people I heard speaking because they did an incredible job explaining a really complicated concept. And I was thinking, wow, like this person seems really credible. They were all based in the US. And I'm just thinking, next time I've got one of my blockchain clients who's going to need US help, they're already front of mind. Right. But that's, again, an abundance mindset, not a scarcity mindset. The other thing is, you know, as you're talking about, Davil, is just, you know, who does the client want to work with? You know, do they want to work with a robot? You know, somebody who's buttoned up and perfectly professional? Or do they want to work with somebody who's human and someone who they like? And I think, you know, again, there's this deep rooted fear in law that you have to be this buttoned up professional. I think we're really seeing the younger generation changing that, you know, photos they're posting, you know, like, you know, people who don't look like traditional lawyers, which is amazing, because I think even when I think of a lawyer, I think of this old white man wearing a suit, probably a three-piece suit. And that's ridiculous. It's such an outdated concept. And I think the modern lawyer doesn't look anything like that. They're doing stuff really differently. And I also think about when I post on LinkedIn, I don't think I've posted a single substantive thing on LinkedIn in the last 8 months, at least. Not a single thing had to do with, you know, here's why I'm the best M&A lawyer, or, you know, here's the four tips I have for tech clients, you know, when they're drafting SaaS agreements. I don't do any of that. And there's nothing wrong with that approach. And there's some people doing an incredible job with that. You know, Laura Frederick is one on LinkedIn who I think has amassed a huge follower base by posting contract tips, but she's still doing it in a fun way, in a storytelling way with some great graphics. And that's an amazing way to do it. You can do it substantively. But I've also seen somebody else, I'm not going to name names here, and it was the worst content I've ever seen. They were trying, but they were literally posting almost like they were taking an agreement and going one line at a time and just explaining stuff, but in the most dry, substantive, boring, not fun way. And it was a little surprise. Their posts were getting very little traction. And I think I've unfollowed them at this point because they were just almost painful to read. But, you know, that's the old school lawyer approach, right? Like, I'm going to write these really substantive, long articles, and that's what will resonate with people. And it doesn't. You know, when I read an article, and I'm always grateful for articles that lawyers write because they're helped me, you know, understand concepts quickly, I'm rarely checking who the author is. I just want the content. So if you're trying to build a brand and build a reputation, you know, the substantive stuff is often not the way to go, especially not in writing. And I think, again, it really comes down to rethinking, you know, what are you trying to do? And if you're trying to build relationships, you've got to really rethink your approach.
That really is wonderful. It's all connected. You know, that's what I'm really coming up with here. It's all connected, being authentic, being vulnerable. And by the way, part of being having an abundance mindset means to turn away people. I mean, just the other day, I was talking with a potential client, and I told him that, listen, it's not right for you to work with me right now, because I can certainly bill you, I can certainly charge you all of this, all of these coaching services, but you don't need me. You can get what you want at a much lower cost, and you don't actually even need me. You need someone completely different. And it's totally okay to do that. I think quite often lawyers just jump at every single offer that's put in front of them. They're like, yeah, sure, we'll do it. But part of the abundance mindset is knowing who you are. You know, it goes back to the idea of being authentic. Do you know who you are? And if there are things you do and there are things you don't do. And there'll always be this line where you'll want to feel a little bit, when the scarcity mindset kicks in, you'll be like, ah, sure, I'll just take the work. I'll just do it, whatever. But it's not productive. And if you do end up taking that work, you're going to be feeding the scarcity mindset that you have within you. And when you say no to that kind of work, you're feeding the abundance mindset, because you know that, well, I did the right thing. And that's a really powerful a thing that reinforces the abundance mindset within you. When your actions actually follow this philosophy, you're going to start seeing these major changes in your life. You know, that's one of the reasons why people recommend giving. A lot of wealth management books, they tell you that, you know, you should give a percentage of your money, your income, every single month or every single year to a charity, something you care about, not just money, but even your time, because it finds a way to come back to you in some form or another. And that's especially true even in the way you conduct yourself professionally in the legal profession. So that's what I had to say. You were about to say something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing, again, as you're talking, you're bringing up so many good points. And it's reminding me, you know, there's this other deep-seated fear in the legal space. And I think lawyers are terrified of losing their clients. And for some reasons, you know, there's lots of good reasons for that, right? You know, at the end of the day, if you have no clients, you may have no business. But I think that underlying fear of losing clients and not being able to get more leads lawyers to say yes to everything, right? And it sort of starts out, you know, as a junior lawyer at a firm, you know, you're not really supposed to say no to work, you know, even if you're already working 12, 14 hour days, you know, you're basically taught not to say no. And there's this unwritten rule, I guess, in some firms where, you know, if you say no, people get annoyed and they stop working with you. You know, you're seen as not a team player or whatever else, you know, you're selfish, you're all these things that aren't accurate, right? You know, you're somebody who has boundaries is the reality, as long as you're being reasonable and you're, you know, you're being true to yourself and you're being fair to the firm. And I look at it now where I see people who are so overworked, and yet when new things come in, they keep saying yes. And I got to be honest, I'm guilty of this too right now, where, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this, thinking, you know, like, why is it so hard to say no? And it starts with that mentality that gets cultivated early on when it's not your own clients. But I think it continues where lawyers are afraid that if they say no to an existing client or to a new client, they'll lose that work. They'll never get it again. And on top of that, they're almost extrapolating, and I won't be able to fill that void. You know, I'll never get another client. I'll never be able to be successful. and I can't say no. And whenever you can't feel like you can't say no, and again, I am guilty of this, you're in trouble, because it means you're taking on stuff you may not want to do, and you're going to be overwhelmed, and often not with the clients you want. And you know, I think it was a couple of years ago when I fired my first client, where I said, look, like it wasn't working for me. I don't know if it was fully working for them. And I just said to myself, like, this client isn't making me happy. I don't enjoy working with them. They're exceptionally demanding. They're complaining about everything. We were doing our part. Their expectations were just, you know, unreasonable in my mind. And I was so thrilled. It was tough to do, but once I had that conversation, I was thrilled, right? That was time I wasn't enjoying spending. And I've seen it also with a lot of younger lawyers, myself included, as they start growing their practices, you start shifting from this mindset, which was absolutely a scarcity mindset of, I will take anyone that calls me that wants to pay me to do work, to saying, you know what, like, you know, you're not quite the right client for me. I've got somebody I can refer you to who I think would be a great fit. But I've seen enough patterns, you know, these days where I know, okay, you know, this is, you know, some of these kind of clients, I want to help them. I truly do. And that's part of my challenge. I want to help everybody, but I know it's not going to be a productive relationship for me. And it's going to be way, way, way more giving than any benefit on my end, and a huge time suck. And I think if you start thinking about the opportunity cost of your time and how you want to spend your day, it makes it a little bit easier. Double, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I think lawyers, you know, with how much they're working, if you're not valuing your time, and again, you're operating from a scarcity mindset, it's no wonder that, you know, you're working too much, right?
There's a fantastic book called When I Say No, I Feel Guilty. It's literally the title of this book that I read a while back. And you're absolutely right. I think when people say no, they feel guilty. They feel that, you know, they're going to be judged. They're going to be looked down upon by other people at their firm. All of these other sorts of things. It's almost like, you know, there's food on your plate and you can't finish it, but you're kind of forced to eat it. You're like, you have to finish it because someone out there is not getting the meal. And it's like, no, you don't have to overeat. You don't have to gorge yourself. And it's the same thing here. Like, just because something is put in front of you doesn't mean you have to take the client. Saying no is actually a tremendously good thing. You know, you say no to things that by saying yes to everything, you're saying no to the things that really matter to you. You're saying no to your expertise. You're saying no to the things that you want to develop. You're saying no to being generous with your friends, with your family. That's important as well, right? There's a lot of burnout, and people, when they say yes to every single thing that comes in front of their plate, they're saying no to their family. So when you start thinking about what you're saying no to in order for you to say yes to, the comparison, the cost of the yes becomes a lot more apparent. And we need to be a lot more mindful of that. And you need to be mindful of your energy as well. We're seeing a lot of people get, as I was saying, completely burned out. What's the value of accumulating the biggest war chest if your health takes a real hit? And you know, especially in the last year, the coronavirus pandemic has really made it apparent that more than anything, your health is so critically important. If your mental health is so critically important, and when people say yes to all of these, every single opportunity that comes in front of their door, they're saying no to their health. They're saying no to their family. They're saying no to their mental health. They're saying yes to burnout as well. And when you incorporate all of these ideas, it becomes a lot easier to say no to opportunities that don't excite you.
I started having these conversations 2 years ago, because I mean, these are things I struggle with for sure. And you know, it's a work in progress. I think it's a lot of, you know, trying to overcome these habits, these thought patterns, these beliefs. And I'm far from a finished product on those things. I think when you grow up in that kind of environment, you know, in a law firm or in other places, it's tough to change that. And, you know, you're taught to feel guilty when you say no. It's one of the core things you learn at a law firm. And I think you see it in law school too. I still remember in my third year of law school, I was certainly not trying overly academically, to put it mildly. I was thankfully a good exam writer, still did fine. But there were people in my law school class who could not turn it off. You know, they were about to start working the most demanding jobs in their life, you know, working full-time at big firms, whether in Toronto or New York or other places. Their grades really did not matter whatsoever. They had good jobs lined up, and they were still working, studying nonstop. And it was, you know, this deep fear, like, what if one day, you know, these grades matter or whatever, and they couldn't turn it off. They were afraid to say, you know, to say no, in this case, I guess, to themselves. But I think, you know, in the legal profession, this fear of saying no, this scarcity mindset when it comes to taking on work or doing anything or giving out information. It's a lot more pervasive than I think we realize. And as you were talking, I mean, I'm still guilty of not doing a great job on some of these things. And it's something I talk about a lot with my wife and with others all the time as something I've got to get better at. Because as you said, when I'm saying yes, I'm saying no to other things. And so when I'm saying no to some things, I'm really saying yes to the things I value more. And I think one of the biggest mindsets I've tried to develop sort of separately from that, but I think that has been really helpful when it comes to business development, but also just in general, is adopting, you know, in my mind, the phrase, you know, how can I help? And truly thinking about every interaction as how can I help? You know, what can I do? I've seen some people on LinkedIn where they'll literally add me and then I'll get a message from them, you know, 2 minutes later and says, how can I help? And I just think, wow, this is not authentic. You know, this is either automated or a terrible way of, you know, being so direct about this. You know, it's not natural. You don't even know me. But you know, when I'm speaking to people, what I'm thinking in the back of my head as I'm hearing them talk is what can I do to make life easier? So an example of that was on a call yesterday with a student, you know, just finishing third-year law school in the U.S., still looking for a job, about to write the bar. And it's been a tough year with the pandemic for everybody. It's affected networking opportunities. It's also just affected, you know, it's been tough in school. I don't think most people have had a great Zoom school of law experience. And so we're chatting and, you know, she's looking to work in a specific area. And it's also in the US in a certain geographical area where like my network is fine, but not exceptional. And then I went, wait a second, you know, I've got my CRM of all the calls I've been on this year. You know, I keep track and I'm thinking, you know, who have I spoken to in that area that they're not maybe going to be the right person, but they're someone who could help. And then I realized, oh, actually, I know the perfect person. Now, this person's a GC, you know, at a company in the exact area. And even if she's not the right person, she will know people. And she's the kind of person who absolutely has an abundance mindset and will be more than happy to help. And we've been chatting, you know, back and forth for the last year. And, you know, one of these people I've met on LinkedIn, never met in real life. I've hopped on a couple video calls, hugely supportive of what she's working on. She's been a big support for me. And I've been able to build these relationships. But again, I'm looking and saying, you know, how can I help? I don't have the answers for this student I'm talking to. I can't do it on my own. I don't have a job to offer. But how can I help by making a connection or by doing something? And I think that mindset will really carry you far. It goes back to my story earlier about that client that was expanding a lot, and they didn't need legal advice, you know, to solve that problem. They needed business advice. And how I could help was making a connection to somebody who had the answer or might at least have some really good advice for them.
I think that's a great place to end it. Being a giver, not a taker, adapting an abundance mindset, being a connector, having a long time horizon, being creative, all of these things will lead to a better career. It'll lead to a more satisfying career. It'll lead to better work-life balance. It'll lead to all the good things that you'd want out of life. So it's not these are not just career tips. These are not just ways to build your book, but it's a way to build a better profession and build a better life. So you know, I'll include some of these points in our show notes. Always a pleasure having you on, Aaron. It was such a wonderful talk we had today.
Always great chatting with you and hope we can keep doing this soon. Maybe this becomes a permanent thing for us.
For show notes from this episode and all previous ones, go to buildyourbook.org/podcast. Make sure to subscribe to it on Apple iTunes, Google, Spotify, or wherever it is that you find your podcast from. Share it with your friends and colleagues. And if you have any questions you'd like us to cover, send us a message on podcast@buildyourbook.org. And if you'd like personalized coaching to help you build your book of business, go on to buildyourbook.org/contact. Until next week, take care.